somewhere in primary school, I guess, I felt this kind of awareness that there is no single truth. There are multiple ways to see a given issue or a given subject or given situation. And none of those points of views are correct. There is no single way of viewing that is more right than the other.
Since early childhood, Karol Tomoki felt the importance of seeing things from multiple perspectives, a value that has stayed with him into adulthood. Nowadays, he channels this awareness into art. Coming up, his story here on Cross Continentals, a podcast about multilingual people with parents from different continents. I am your host, Momoe, and you're listening to Season 1, which focuses on what's it like to be Polish-Japanese. You told me that, just like me, you also think about your name a lot and what people call you, and different groups of people call you different things, right?
Yeah.
How does it work like for you?
I always have some issues about how to introduce myself. Well, maybe not in day-to-day situations like when I'm, you know, living daily life in Poland, but whenever I introduce myself in international contexts, and you know, I consider this podcast one example of such a situation, I have these doubts how to introduce myself. I think of my two names as not a first name and second name, Karol and Tomoki, but more like I have two first names, and I tend to use them depending on the country I live in, I'm in at the moment. So in Poland, I introduce myself as Karol, and when I'm in Japan, I introduce myself as Tomoki. And I kind of insist on them to use the Japanese name when I'm in Japan. And I get kind of frustrated when people in Japan call me Karol, using my Polish name. And I try to correct them, you know, like, you know, gently, but, you know, reminding them it's Tomoki. and some people insist on using the Polish name. So they, you know, nod and say, oh, right, okay. And then they go back to calling me Karol again. When I meet some people in the international context, when we talk in English, for example, I'm never sure how to introduce myself. So when you ask me how I want to be, what name should appear next to the episode, I had these second thoughts. And I had a really hard time figuring out whether you should call me Karol or Tomoki. Using one of those names would kind of feel incomplete in a way, because we were talking about the multinational identity. Using both would sound artificial, on the other hand. And there's this feeling that no solution is good. You know, it's perfect. There's always something weird about it.
It reminds me of when people in Japan, for example, it's quite common for people who don't look entirely Japanese to be spoken to in English. And I have friends like that. And then they get frustrated because some of them don't even speak English and they speak fluent Japanese.
Yeah.
And it's that feeling of, why are you speaking to me in English when I'm fluent in Japanese? And, you know, maybe I was born and raised here. And all of a sudden you're just like bringing up this language that I totally don't even know and have nothing in common with.
Yeah.
I wonder if there are some parallels there.
Yeah.
Does that sound familiar?
For sure. Yeah, so you hear a lot of stories about like this, right? You know, and from other halfers and foreigners or people with different ethnic backgrounds. I would like it if it was a little more multicultural awareness in Japan. And that's probably also something of a feedback loop, because I'm aware of the fact that they're not very experienced in, you know, in dealing with different cultures. I think I'm more sensitive to some signals that would tell me that they're not treating me as one of their own. And then when I pick up on these signals, I get, you know, hurt or frustrated. I wanna prove back, you know, that I'm one of them. If I would just kind of forget for a moment how they were raised, in what cultural environment, maybe it would be easier for me to feel okay between them. I wouldn't get so sensitive. I wouldn't try to find so many signals that are for or against my feeling of being, you know, one of them. It's just, you know, how you can start to think a little too hard about this.
You were born and raised in Poland, and you've spent most of your life in Poland. Did I get it right?
Yeah. So I was born in Warsaw, and we spent the first couple of years of my life here in Warsaw. And then we moved to Tokyo for around 3 years. And then we came back to Warsaw with our family. And we pretty much stayed here. And we went to Japan for every summer holiday. And around my teenage years, I guess we started to go there maybe every other year. When I got older, it started to become more and more. We started to go there less and less.
Previously, when we spoke, you told me that you had a six-year period when you didn't go to Japan. Mm-hmm. And then you went back and you felt like you shouldn't leave it for so long, not going to Japan. Can you describe what was going through your head and why did that thought or feeling come up?
Yeah, so as I said, when we were young, our parents made sure that we go to Japan every year for holidays to see our family, you know, for Obon to visit our grandmother and visit our grandfather's grave, you know, see the uncles and all that. And when I got older, I started to, you know, feel like I don't want to go to Japan every summer holidays. You know, I've seen that. I want to see something else. And also, I want to see the world and, you know, all that. So I started to go to less and less. And then when I started working around that time, there was this period of time when I didn't go anywhere for holidays. I guess I started being a little workaholic and, you know, focusing on career or something like this. I even forgot that I stopped going to Japan for such a long time, and I finally went there after 6 years. When I arrived there, there was this weird feeling of suddenly being very sensitive to all these stimuli. I remember distinctively when we landed on the airport, first of all, hearing the Japanese language. That was the first signal that, oh my God, something is happening inside me, right? This is familiar. And then we went out of the airport and entered the train, and the sound of the train's doors closing, the sound of the announcements inside the train, the sight of the buildings outside the window of the train. I remember the trip from the airport and just realizing everything was so kind of oversaturated, the sights and sounds. And I'm getting kind of emotional even talking about it right now. It felt so intense in a way. And I realized that, damn, this is home. It feels so close to my heart. Like I remember all these sights and sounds, and I almost forgot about them, and now they're coming back, right? And that was the moment that I realized how much I missed those sights and sounds and smells and faces, and how I almost forgot about that I missed them. And that realization, you know, was a little sad. The fact that you can long for something and almost forget about it was strange. Around that moment, I kind of made a promise to myself that I'm never going to repeat this, and I'm never going to let myself be away from Japan for that long of a time.
You're also an artist and a graphic designer. How does your multicultural background feed into your art and work?
A deep question. I'm sure in a multitude
deep
of
deep questions
ways.
On this podcast.
Sure. I'm sure there's this many, many ways in which it influences it. One of the ways I can try to answer is that the line of work that I chose, being a graphic designer, is itself very much connected to my background. And what I mean by that is that being raised in between two very different countries with very different cultures from two opposite sides of the earth, and spending time in very early childhood, I think gave me this awareness that there are multiple points of views in the world. And for any given subject, there is at least two different perspectives on that. I remember that when I was a little kid, I had this awareness pretty clearly stated in my head. I kind of remember it. I don't know how old I was exactly, but somewhere in primary school, I guess, I felt this kind of awareness that there is no single truth. There are multiple ways to see a given issue or a given subject or given situation. And none of those points of views are correct. There is no single way of viewing that is more right than the other. And I remember that it felt important for me to know it, be aware of it. I feel like it was important for me to try to show it to different people, classmates even. In some way, I was in primary school, so obviously I didn't know how to do it. But it kind of felt important for me to try to make other people aware of that. And feeling frustrated when I saw that people don't get it, that people don't see it that way, that people behave as if there's a single way of doing things or a single way of thinking, which is correct, and the others are not.
Do you have any examples of trying to show this to little kids that you were going to school with?
I don't have any specific memories, but I think that I generally was always that kind of person that was trying to see the world through other people's eyes. I remember when I was going back home from school that I was analyzing some situations that happened and thinking about them pretty actively, trying to understand some situations from other people's perspectives, trying to somehow sort them inside my head. And I guess I was just this kind of analytic person, and that may be something about the genes, not necessarily about my multicultural background, but I guess those two things maybe somehow joined together. When people were coming to me asking for advice, I was trying to give them as an objective perspective as possible,
Was that appreciated when you were trying to be objective and they just wanted you to take their side, for example?
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't know. I think I was always perceived as this very rational person that is trying not to, impose my views or just trying to see those all the situations from many perspectives to try to take them into account and all that. But I don't know. It's probably also from my family. I'm a younger brother. I have an older brother. And I think being the younger one, I was trying to be very observant and trying to trying to understand the family dynamics inside the house. And I was also always the quiet type, the listening type. I wonder how much of that is about this different cultures that I was raised in. I'm sure that that had a huge impact, but also probably something about my personality, something inside the genes. But going back to those different cultures, I'm pretty sure that gave me a very literal proof of that there's no single way of living which is more correct than the other. You could see it also as a way of me trying to show others how it feels to be me, you know, a thinly veiled attempt of, you know, explaining this to myself as a way of trying to show people, you know, try to educate others, try to show them the better way of living, the way of living that allows us to live together better. You know, this, you're going to live with different cultures, whether we like it or not. So, you know, let me show you how it feels like or something like this. But I think at the bottom of it, if you dig a little deeper, I just wanted to show others in a very, you know, organic, in a very, like, non-obvious way, somehow subconsciously trying to show them how it feels like to see the world the way I see it, and getting frustrated in the process of that. Because obviously you can't do it. You can't change their childhood. You can't, you know, move them to a different country, you know, and all that.
You did a project called Kto Ty Jesteś, in which you photographed various Polish people who have mixed backgrounds. I can draw a very straight line from your background to that project. How did that come about?
It started as an assignment on my art studies. So when I was studying at the Academy of Fine Arts on the photography classes, we had this one assignment that was simply do a personal project, whatever you want. I already knew that I want to do something about multinational identities. I was a little afraid of doing it because it was a very personal subject for me. When I was studying in the academy for a couple of years, then I knew that, you know, the more personal a subject you choose, the better the work is going to be. When I felt this stress of doing such a project, this feeling a little bit of being afraid of being, I don't know, too maybe exposed, I knew that I'm on to something and I need to grab that. At that point, I was already aware of two other projects that other artists did. And one of those were the Hapa project by Kip Fallback. And the other one was Hafu to Hafu by Tetsuro Miyazaki. I felt that I want to do something similar, but since there were already some projects like this that are exploring the half Asian or half Japanese people, I thought I will try to do something similar, but with half Polish people, since there is not much awareness in Poland around people like this.
They're not discussed. They're not very visible in Poland, I would say.
Right? Yeah. Yeah, and I feel like it's only starting to happen in the recent years when we have a lot of movement and a lot of people coming in from different countries, from all the different continents, that this discussion is starting to happen, and this social awareness is also starting to happen. Around that time, there was this influx of immigrants to Europe in general, and Poland didn't accept many, of course, but there's a very, very hostile attitude towards immigrants at the time. I also wanted to take part in a discussion around this in a way, not in a direct way, not in an obvious way. So I thought about doing the portraits of half Polish people, and I asked three questions to each of them, three same questions. When do you feel Polish? When do you not feel Polish? And what it means to you to be a person of mixed background? It turned out to be one of the most important things that I did in my, so to say, artistic life. I definitely remember that project very fondly, and it was a great success for me. You know, it was very small, in scale. I invited, I think, less than 15 people, 12, 13, something like this. I did interviews with them, took their photos, and set up a website, which is still online. I got a very positive feedback from the people that saw it. And I got some additional people that that wrote to me and said that they want to take part also. And so I invited them as well. I would like to explore that a little more, especially that the topic of half Polish people is, I don't know if it was ever explored in an artistic context before. So I'm not aware of works like this.
We will link the project in the description of this episode so that people can check it out. What did you learn during this project?
I learned that there are different perspectives on that, which is...
But you knew that already.
Which is pretty obvious, right? But it was great to hear of them. But also I discovered that, maybe also a little obvious, but that there are some common threads, and that people that I invited to this project often feel in a similar way around their identity. And they are dealing with some, you know, issues that are familiar to me. One thing that I found out through this project was that there's sort of a clear line that is kind of this dividing the answers one way or the other. And that was a pretty shocking discovery for me, although in hindsight, it kind of feels a little obvious. I found out that if you would divide those answers, especially for the third question, so what it means for you to be mixed, if you would divide those answers into two big groups, and, you know, I'm kind of oversimplifying a little for the sake of the discussion right now, but so you would get the positive answers and you would get the negative answers, positive being answers like, it gives me a lot of talking points. People are very interested. It's easier for me to make friends in parties or in social situations. It makes me feel like a citizen of the world. It makes my life more interesting, etc. And then you had the more kind of negative answers where people talked about that you always miss someplace, wherever you are, you're longing for some other place, that you never feel at home. There are some talks about discrimination or, I don't know, difficult experiences. So in general, you could divide those answers into two big boxes, whether you get the good stuff from being mixed or the bad stuff from being mixed. Again, a little oversimplifying, but... And there was this one factor that I found out when I read through the answers and I looked through the photos that would be a kind of a good indicator of where would that people fall, which of the boxes. And that was their skin color, whether they were half Polish and half some country where there's a little different skin complexion. It felt depressing to find it out, it being so obvious. Although it's not very surprising,
it's not obvious.
Right?
Yeah. It's actually not very obvious. I mean, I also think it's sort of maybe in a Polish context a little bit, right? Because in Poland, you know, people tend to be white, right, on the spectrum of skin shades. So I told you this before. I think if you moved this project somewhere else, where the predominant skin color was different, maybe you would have a different reaction, right? But it's really fascinating that it was. That's what you saw in the responses. I wonder, where would Japanese Polish people fall into that? Because, you know, this, I don't know, the skin complex, I wonder, right? Mm. It's not very dark. It's not fully white. Where do they fall?
So the sample wasn't very big, but mm. I would say they fall on the negative side. Maybe mm-hmm. me calling it skin mm-hmm. complexion is also a bit oversimplifying it. Maybe I should say more like, I don't know, facial features or something like this. Mm-hmm. And,
so basically people who are, say, like French Polish or German Polish, right? Where the looks of the two sides were pretty similar.
Yeah.
Those people were more comfortable with their
yeah.
duality. Is that
yeah, that was the general rule. People that... on the first look that they didn't look different, and people that were very obviously not, you know, 100% ethnic Polish, those were the ones that were talking more about some difficulties in their experience. I think that was the main finding of the project for me, that the appearances do matter.
Just like me, you grew up with people telling you that you're really attractive or good looking. Does it give you a sense of perspective on that effectively? Because you start to realize that it's a little bit more relative, right? That it's not so clear cut what is attractive.
It's difficult, as you can see, to answer this, but it's also kind of a sensitive subject because, I don't know, it always felt weird for me to hear that from people around me. Whether I was in Poland or in Japan, I often heard people calling me attractive and, you know, doing it sort of a little too much. It often almost didn't feel like a compliment in a way, more like this pointing out that you look different. And I find it attractive, right? So that may somehow be connected to what we talked before about me being a little more sensitive to the signals about people pointing out that I'm different, maybe a little oversensitive to that. And maybe that was just a simple compliment from their side. But yeah, that's true that I got that a lot in my childhood and in my teenage years. I always felt the need to be humble. So try not to use my appearance, I guess, in any way. I was trying to fit in and trying to kind of act as if it's not a factor. And I didn't welcome those compliments.
Is it also because it's superficial? Because it forces situations in which people look at you and make a lot of judgments based on what you look like, whereas obviously we all have many levels and depths, and what we look like doesn't really reflect what's happening inside a lot of times, right?
Well, for sure there was that. When you're mixed race, you kind of get used to that. People comment on your looks, and that's the first thing that they're going to say to you when they get to know you, especially in Poland, when you're half Japanese. When people found out that I'm half Japanese, they were always like very amazed and saying that it's so cool. You get questions like, do you still have samurais in Japan? Do you still have ninjas? You would feel like you're this representative of Japan. And every time you meet a new person, you have to answer the standard set of questions. And you almost have to behave like this movie star that is promoting a new movie and always answering the same set of questions, right? You almost want to have this card prepared, beforehand with all the FAQs and saying, no, there are no samurais in Japan, right? From a long time, I don't feel more Polish or more Japanese. I just feel like myself, right? And I don't know, I don't watch anime so much, so please don't ask me about, what's my favorite Dragon Ball character. And you just feel like this ambassador of sorts. I guess about the appearance, because that's what you were asking about, that's connected to that. And me downplaying that aspect probably was also my way of trying to fit in, meaning me trying to avoid becoming this sort of, tokenized cultural ambassador, a sole representative of my fatherland, an expert on all things Japanese, and a great sponge for all the thoughts and comments people have about Japan.
Previously, you told me that when the Black Lives Matter movement started, that you could relate to that on many levels. Why is that?
When the news about BLM started flowing in to Poland and I started reading about them, it didn't kick in at first. It took me a while. And I was reading the news and I was watching the videos of protests happening there. I remember that at first I almost, it feels kind of bad saying this, but at first I remember that I didn't involve myself in reading about those news as much. I was holding off on catching up on them. Apparently, I was subconsciously trying to sort of protect myself because I knew that if I get myself to read about it and get involved, that is going to do something with me. And I was apparently too afraid of that, or, with all the stuff that was already happening around pandemic and emotionally inside of me. I finally felt like, okay, maybe I should just catch up on that. And I started to read all the stories and watch the videos. And at first, I almost got numb emotionally. And after that, I just remember I sat in my apartment near the window and I just started crying so much, very uncontrollably, like very, very deeply. I know exactly why is it resonating with me so much. Because obviously that was the movement around the racial stuff, and that feels already very relatable for me. I don't want to say that I know exactly what it feels like, because I'm aware that it's a very different thing, but on some level, it felt very relatable. But the thing that I discovered the most, that kind of struck me the most, was that only at this moment, I realized how much anger is inside me, how much of an suppressed feelings of anger, of not agreeing with this, some grief even is inside of me that stayed unexpressed for all these years, and me sort of not being aware of those feelings inside. I was in situations where I didn't agree with what's happening, but I was just smiling along and playing along, you know, and kind of accepting it as this is my life, this is what I'm experiencing, and I'm going to experience always. The thing that I was almost kind of jealous was seeing how big of a support group people seem to have. And I know that's just kind of a projection from my side. I have no idea what's it like, obviously. But it seemed like, at least, that there are many, many voices around there, and there's this growing group of activists and people, just ordinary people that are just raising voices and sharing their own perspectives. And I almost felt jealous in a way of that. I wish that there were more people like this in Poland that would share stories like this.
Is it a community, effectively? Was that a piece that resonated with you, or there was a longing for it?
Yeah, the community and this common expression of anger.
You told me previously when we spoke that even though you spent a big chunk of your life in Poland and you live there, you have a family in Poland, you still feel like you could pick up and leave. I mean, it must come, I imagine, from that, right? From the fact that it's not like you're 100% accepted, and that lack of acceptance maybe dilutes the feeling of being rooted in a place. Am I getting that right?
Yeah, for sure. There's also the family aspect of it. Neither my Polish family or Japanese family is very, it's not very tight. I don't feel like they cultivated the family relationships as much when I was young, for me to be able to feel connected to one land or the other. That's probably also a huge aspect of this. I think those are the two aspects, one being the family relations and the other the social experience that you get outside of home. I don't know which one is more important, but as you say, I guess I don't feel particularly like Poland is my place, so to say, which is weird because I spent majority of my life in here, and I do feel very familiar with the place. It should feel like home, and maybe it does, but I don't have this deep feeling of being rooted in here. Mm-hmm. I don't have really strong feelings about moving out. It's not like this. It's more like I don't feel rooted in a single place. It's a little similar with Japan. There are many places there that feel very, very old and familiar for me. But again, it doesn't feel like a place that I would that I could stay in and feel forever safe.
I do wonder sometimes how people from a country who are born and raised, you know, sort of more, say, like a traditional Polish person, if they come to Poland, do they just feel super comfortable, right? I wonder what that experience is like. And I also wonder if we're maybe idealizing it in a way.
Oh, for sure.
Because for us, it's different. But then maybe we should start a country and compare. And compare, maybe all get fed up with each other and realize that everyone sucks.
Yeah. That's a great idea.
And live in caves somewhere in the desert.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, idealizing is a big part of that for sure. I'm sure that I'm kind of romanticizing this aspect of being a single cultural, identity. I have no idea what it feels like. I only know what it feels like to be me. So, I talked about it with different people, and they gave me their perspective, and they are very similar in a way that, they don't know what it's like to be raised between two countries, but they don't know what it's like to live a different life than theirs. So they kind of feel connected to Poland. But again, there are people, my friends, who don't feel really connected to Poland. So it doesn't necessarily have to do something with your cultural or ethnic background, I guess. Mm-hmm. So again, maybe the stuff about family is also an aspect here. I would like to know what it feels like to be grounded.
You and me both.
Yeah.
Karol Tomoki, this has been a really, really pleasant conversation. Thank you so much for very thoughtful comments.